Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 24 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 13th of June 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Margaret and Desney. And in the news, Great Yarmouth Minster is attacked by vandals. It's been County Court Week at Yarmouth, so lots of gory details to come. And Great Yarmouth Borough Council and the rest of Norfolk's councils have still not agreed on their preferred direction for reorganisation. Once again, plenty of news stories, but first, we have two birthdays. Both are on Tuesday, so to Diane Edwards and to Edna Gurney, our very best birthday wishes go out to you both for a great day. Time for some news, so it's over to Margaret and Desney for the first part of this week's news, followed closely by the, as promised, reminder of last week's special message from Vision Norfolk.
Hello everyone, Desney and Margaret here, reading you the news. I hope I don't fall asleep, I had rather a disturbed night. We had some intruders trying to get into our garage, but they did get away with nothing. So, Cliff Park Ormiston Academy rated by Ofsted. Cliff Park Ormiston Academy in Goulston was rated good in all areas in the latest inspection. The high school's improvement comes just 2.5 years after it was judged as requires improvement. Inspectors described the progress as marked and highlighted an ambitious curriculum and a meticulously planned personal development programme that offers a wealth of life experiences. Harry French, principal of Cliff Park, said, "We are incredibly proud to receive a good judgment across the board from Ofsted. This report is an important recognition of the hard work and dedication of our students, staff and wider school community over recent years, which have made this positive report possible." Ofsted also praised the school's everyday excellent behaviour and a culture of high expectations. The report noted that the revised lesson structure has had a notable impact on pupils' learning and behaviour, and that pupils enjoy coming to school and are highly positive about the changes. Mr. French said the success reflects a collective effort. He added, "We've worked tirelessly to raise expectations, strengthen our curriculum, and foster a caring and ambitious culture that supports every student to thrive. I want to thank our staff, families and our students for their commitment and positivity as we continue to build on this success." Erin Wiles, Education Director for the East at Normiston Academies Trust, congratulated the Academy. He said, "Congratulations to Harry and the team at Cliff Park Ormiston Academy. This is a fantastic achievement that reflects the school's unwavering focus on high standards, inclusivity and opportunity for all. The school's positive transformation journey is a testament to the strength of leadership and the collaborative spirit of the whole school community."
Hello, it's Margaret here. Poor old Desney, say, if she nods off, I'll give her a swift kick somewhere. Where's Dixon of Dock Green when you need him? A 35-year-old man has been remanded in custody after attacking somebody with a smashed glass bottle in Yarmouth town centre. Arturas Silinskas of Stone Road, Great Yarmouth, was charged by police with wounding with intent and possession of an offensive weapon, namely a broken bottle, in a public place after he was arrested following an incident in one of the town's rows. Selinskas appeared before Norwich Magistrates Court on June the 10th and was remanded in custody until his next court appearance at Norwich Crown Court on July the 8th. The incident happened at Austin Row in Great Yarmouth at 12:30 p.m. on Saturday, June the 7th. Emergency services attended and a man in his 60s was taken to James Paget Hospital for treatment. His injuries were not thought to be life-threatening. Locals say that forensics put up a white tent in the rows next to the place, the former Palmer store, and carried out investigations in the area until around 6 p.m. A man is in a critical condition in hospital after being hit by a car in Galston. The crash happened at around 11:15 p.m. last Saturday in Shrublands Way and involved a black Nissan X-Trail and a pedestrian. The pedestrian, a man in his 40s, was taken to Addenbrookes Hospital with life-threatening injuries. Anyone with any information is asked to contact Norfolk Constabulary.
After 3 years of hell, a woman who used her life savings to move to Norfolk can finally breathe a sigh of relief. Donna Holland, a grandmother and former HGV driver, has won a battle against the owners of Kingfisher Holiday Park in Borough Castle after she discovered faults with her brand new static caravan. The 56-year-old, who is originally from Essex, had moved to Norfolk in 2022. But her hopes for a peaceful retirement near the coast were dashed when she found herself battling for a refund after the new home proved to be riddled with issues. "I was using my life savings to move to Norfolk," she said. "It's the most beautiful place. The people are lovely. The beaches are lovely. It's a lovely place to retire to." She first intended to buy a Rivington model caravan, but raised concerns after noticing damage to the patio doors. The park then offered her a Pemberton Abingdon, described as the Rolls-Royce of caravans, which she agreed to purchase for £70,500. Defects soon became apparent, however, including a leaking shower and a badly sealed bathroom door frame. "I waited 2 or 3 weeks for the caravan to be sighted," Mrs. Holland said. "That was in summer 2022. The day after it was sighted, water started pouring underneath the caravan, beneath the bathroom area." She raised the alarm immediately, but her request for a refund was rejected by the park's owners, Pratt Developments, which trades as Island Meadow Parks. "In July, I asked for a full refund or a replacement, but in August they refused," she said. "So in December 2022, I started legal proceedings. I had no choice." The case was heard at Norfolk County Court, sitting at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court last month. After 2 days of evidence, the presiding judge, Recorder Gibbons, ruled in Mrs. Holland's favour, concluding that the caravan as a whole was not of satisfactory quality. In his judgment, he said, "Although several of the defects referred to in the joint expert report might be classified, taken singularly, as being minor, in my judgment, when taken together, they amount to a caravan which, although brand new, was not of satisfactory quality." He noted there were issues with the shower and with the sealant in the bathroom, as well as evidence of other window seals coming apart, some skirting boards which were loose, and rubbish left within the living room shelving. Recorder Gibbons ordered Island Meadow Parks to pay Mrs. Holland a full refund of £70,500.
Stone-throwing vandals have caused heartbreak after smashing windows at a Yarmouth parish church. The suspects caused almost £12,000 worth of damage to the Minster Church of St Nicholas in Great Yarmouth, which is believed to be the largest parish church in England. It's already the fourth in a devastating series of criminal incidents suffered by the Grade 2 listed building over the past 12 months. The church was previously broken into on 3 occasions, with thieves taking money from the donation box and also damaging property. Norfolk Police received a report of criminal damage at the church on Thursday, May the 22nd. The incident happened between 7 p.m. on May the 21st and 7 p.m. on May the 22nd. Wendy Betts, the 75-year-old church warden, said, "It's really heartbreaking. Replacing the windows will cost almost £12,000. And on top of that sum, the church is also considering installing a guardrail priced at around £4,000. The window has been boarded up while the church waits for a company to remove the damaged panes of glass." Miss Betts said, "This is a people's church. I think it's so sad these things are happening. The investigation is ongoing. If anyone has any information which could assist police inquiries, please get in touch." A wind farm developer has invested more than £2 million into community projects and education in schools across Norfolk. Equinor, the Danish energy company behind the Sheringham, Shoal and Dudgeon wind farms off the North Norfolk coast, has supported hundreds of children, educators and vulnerable people through both its Sheringham Shoal Community Fund and Dudgeon STEM in Schools Fund. The Sheringham Shoal Fund is celebrating its 15th year and focuses on projects related to renewable energy, marine, environmental, safety and sustainability. The Dudgeon Fund, meanwhile, was set up 8 years ago and commits £100,000 a year to educational and skills initiatives for young people in Norfolk in the fields of science, technology, engineering and maths. That's STEM. A pot of more than £2 million has been distributed by the Norfolk Community Foundation so far. This year alone, the Dudgeon STEM in Schools Fund has reached 35 schools and 6,000 children throughout Norfolk, with 19 projects being funded over the past 2 years. Projects include the transformation of a groundsman hut at Alderman Peel High School in Wells into an all-weather STEM shed, which has become home to the school's Kit Car Club, where students have built and worked on electric cars. The initial project led to students taking part in 2 electric car races at the Hethel Racetrack, where they went on to qualify for the Green Power race finals at Goodwood. Oh, my word. Other Dudgeon-funded projects include a design and technology conference for 100 industry professionals and 300 students, a 2-week student voyage with the Excelsior Trust, a boat-building club at Cliff Park, Ormiston High in Galston, virtual reality, that's VR, headsets for Litcham School in King's Lynn, and wind energy workshops delivered through StemPoint and the East of England Energy Group, that's EEEGR skills, for energy work to hundreds of children at the Royal Norfolk Show. The Sheringham Show Fund has also contributed to hundreds of projects throughout its 15-year lifespan. It recently helped fund a new electric bus for North Norfolk Community Transport, which has given elderly and vulnerable people an opportunity to get out of their homes and connect with the outside world. The Sheringham, Shoal and Dudgeon wind farm extension projects are currently underway, which will double the capacity of the existing wind farms and provide renewable energy to power an additional 785,000 UK homes. Speaking at the Southern North Sea Conference at the Norfolk Showground last month, Sophie Skip, Equinor's principal stakeholder manager for the region, said the Danish energy company's work in Norfolk is setting examples to the rest of its worldwide operations. Equinor's journey in offshore wind across the world has been built on the expertise of Norfolk, where its first renewables projects were built, she said. "Norfolk is so important to us, not just in our building and operations, but also our engagement with the community and to provide opportunities for all."
Exmouth Road Warehouse to become housing. A derelict warehouse in South Yarmouth will be converted into housing. Andre Calico of Calico Building Services has been given permission to change the use of a former storage unit on Exmouth Road into 5 one-bedroom residential flats. The housing would be on the first and second floors, while the ground floor would remain used for commercial purposes. The plans also include a second floor roof extension and new windows. The building dates to the mid-19th century and is a former fish processing house. It has been out of use for some time. In a report approving the bid, planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council said the lack of outdoor amenity space was unfortunate. The benefits of bringing the building back into use, however, were important, and the provision of housing is very beneficial. One member of the public supported the proposal, stating, "We need to see these derelict, perfectly usable buildings put back into use." A previous bid to convert the property into 4 two-bedroom flats was withdrawn in 2023.
50 cyclists are to arrive in Great Yarmouth this weekend after riding 330 miles in honour of a friend with motor neuron disease, MND. The team of riders will end their journey at the town's Premier Inn on Beach Parade on Saturday between 4pm and 6pm, having set off from Barmouth in Wales. The event was organised by Justin Middleton, whose best friend, David Scott, was diagnosed with MND in February 2024. Mr Middleton said, "To offer my support during these difficult times, a team of great friends and I have been putting together challenges and events to help raise much-needed funds for the charities which have been supporting Davy during his MND journey. Some of the more experienced riders will be doing the whole challenge on their own, and other less experienced riders are doing it as a relay team. Friends and family will be travelling to Great Yarmouth to see us finish the event, and some additional cyclists will be joining us for the last day." Alastair Lang, the MND Association relationship fundraiser, said, "David is an extraordinary person who has done so much to raise money and awareness of motor neuron disease, a condition which affects more than 5,000 people in the UK at any one time. This incredible challenge will do even more to help people living with MND and their families, and we couldn't be more grateful for the team's support. We wish everyone involved the best of luck. The event hopes to raise awareness and funds for the MND Association. The group plans to celebrate completing the task by having a few well-earned drinks," I should say so. To learn more about the Barmouth to Yarmouth Challenge or to donate, visit GiveWheel, all one word, it's givewheel.com/fundraising/6142/Barmouth-to-Yarmouth-bike-ride. For more information about MND and the MND Association, visit mndassociation.org.
A retired engineer died after sustaining a serious head injury during a fall, a court has heard. Michael Brown, 83, of Bedfordshire, passed away at the James Paget Hospital on May the 28th. An inquest opening at Norfolk Coroner's Court heard that the medical cause of death was a right subdural hematoma due to a head injury following a fall. A full inquest to determine the official cause of death will take place at the court later this month.
Call for end of flood chaos. The chaos, which means almost 40 organisations in Norfolk have responsibility to tackle flooding, must end if the county is to be properly protected, a specially convened summit has heard. The meeting is in Westminster, convened by Mid-Norfolk MP George Freeman, also heard calls for housing developers to be forced to take responsibility to ensure new home schemes do not trigger flooding elsewhere. Areas such as Attleboro and Long Stratton have been hard hit by inland flooding in recent years, and frustration has grown about the lack of powers and abdication of responsibility in preventing it. Conservative Mr. Freeman organised the summit after seeing firsthand how householders had suffered devastating flooding. He said, "It was a gut-wrenching reality check. Mid-Norfolk is not meant to flood. It's time we recognise that flooding here is a wake-up call for our entire nation. this crisis is knocking on everyone's door. The existing framework is a bureaucratic nightmare, with 36 organisations involved in flood response in Norfolk alone. It's a recipe for chaos. When no one knows who is accountable, communities suffer. People's homes are at stake. Norfolk County Council is the lead LUD flood authority and, as the highways authority, has responsibility for maintaining its roads and footpaths, including preventing flooding. But other organisations with flooding responsibilities include Anglian Water, internal drainage boards, district councils, the Environment Agency, National Highways and the owners of watercourses. Mr Freeman is introducing a private members bill in Parliament which would improve the law to set clear responsibilities for flood prevention, improve accountability, ring-fence money and make house builders liable when their schemes trigger flooding elsewhere. He said, "It's not always about more money. Sometimes a common sense approach is needed. Why, for example, is it incumbent on our internal drainage boards to have to apply for expensive licences in order to undertake certain types of work, sometimes having to wait months for the permits? Let's instead work locally, use local knowledge to our best advantage and trust our key organisations involved in the management of our land and waterways to do the job, rather like a trusted trader scheme." Mr Freeman, whose bill is set to be introduced late this summer, has also been calling for developers to be made more accountable. He said they are building homes on the edges of villages, but not upgrading drains, which can lead to flooding elsewhere.
Much more news coming shortly, but first, some news and a request from Vision Norfolk. And this is from Edward Bates from the Great Yarmouth Hub. It's titled Understanding Technology Use for People with Vision Loss, and it reads, "We know that a range of technologies, from phones and Alexas to speaking clocks and to remote monitoring systems, are increasingly being used to help people stay connected and living independently in their own homes. But we want to learn more about how this is, isn't, or could work better for people with vision loss who are 60 years old and over. Vision Norfolk are hosting a series of workshops to understand more about your experiences of digital technologies, both good and bad, what technologies you do actually use, what they help you to do, and what difficulties or challenges you may have, and what you would like to be able to do using technologies. We also want to hear from people who don't use technologies and to understand why that is. We would like, therefore, to invite you to participate in a workshop being held with Vision Norfolk at 12 Hall Quay, Great Yarmouth, NR31HP, on the 11th of August from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. We will be able to offer a voucher both to thank you for your time and to cover costs incurred through your involvement in this study. If you are interested, please call Edward Bates on 01493 7459 973. That's 01493 745 973. Or alternatively, you can email him on edward.bates@visionnorfolk.org.uk. That's edward.bates, B-A-T-E-S, at visionnorfolk, or one word, .org.uk, to register your interest or find out more. Or you can email the researcher, Alison Tingle, on a.tingle@hearts.ac.uk, or telephone her on 07842 323 500. OK, back to the ladies for the second part of the news, followed by Desney's look at the coming week's TV.
Hunt for fly tippers. The search for large-scale fly tippers is on after mattresses, a vacuum cleaner and a toaster were found dumped in Yarmouth. The items were found in a row between King Street and Deanside on Monday. Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Rangers and Recycling team appealed to the public on social media to try to find the culprit. They wrote, "Yesterday morning we had a report of a large fly tip. CCTV covers this area and we want to make good use of it. However, we ideally need a time frame. If you noticed this waste, can you let us know when you first saw it?" The items pictured include what appears to be several mattresses, a toaster, a vacuum cleaner and a carpet, among other things. Fly tipping is defined as the unlawful disposal of household, industrial, commercial or other controlled waste and is a criminal offence in the UK. There is no minimum punishment for the crime and larger fines can be issued for larger scale fly tipping.
A hospice charity has submitted a planning application for an end-of-life care facility. The application is for a project on a 7-acre site at Sidegate Lane in Galston. If approved, the proposed hospice will have an outpatient and community hub offering therapy services, a community cafe and an inpatient facility with up to 16 beds. The land was once owned by East Coast Hospice, which merged with St Elizabeth Hospice in 2023. The merger included a feasibility study and stakeholder consultations to ensure the new hospice meets the needs of the Great Yarmouth and Waveney communities. Norwich-based LSI Architects has worked with the hospice to design plans for the site, aiming to expand palliative care services in the area. The project includes collaboration with the Louise Hamilton Trust, aiming to deliver high-quality end-of-life services to the local community. Judy Newman, St Elizabeth Hospice's chief executive, said, "We are delighted to submit this planning application and share our full plans with the wider community. With the invaluable support of Roberta Lovick and the Louise Hamilton Trust, we are in a strong position to develop the community hospice sustainably in a single phase. Their partnership has made this opportunity possible, and we are truly grateful." Construction is planned to begin by early 2026, taking up to 2 years to complete. St Elizabeth Hospice has cared for more than 6,000 patients in Great Yarmouth and Waveney since April 2019. Through its healthcare partnership with East Coast Community Healthcare. The requirement for hospice is evidenced by population trends from the Office for National Statistics, predicting a 35% increase in demand for palliative care by 2040. Currently, only 2.1% of residents in Norfolk and Waveney die in a hospice, below the national average of 4.4%. To view and comment on the proposals, search Great Yarmouth Borough Council's planning portal for application, reference 06/25/034/VCF.
Jail for man who assaulted women in club. A drunk Romanian man sexually assaulted two women on the dance floor of a Yarmouth club after making lewd gestures to them, a court has heard. Georgi Flad, 47, who spoke through an interpreter in court, had been at Liberties in Great Yarmouth, where the two victims were also on a night out. Norwich Crown Court heard the two counts of sexual assault arise from the same incident at the King Street venue. Ian James, prosecuting, said one of the women described Vlad, who was unknown to her, having made a lewd gesture towards her and her friends. She said Vlad then tried to dance with her and touched her inappropriately. Mr. James said she was not interested and made that clear by shaking her head, but he grabbed her backside. The victim said Vlad was quite forceful. She held her hands up to his face and said, "No, that's not okay." The woman tried to get a male friend to dance with her to put him off, but it was not successful. Vlad grabbed her arm again and did so really forcefully. Vlad then turned his attention to another woman who said he was somewhat touchy-feely and put both his hands down her sides and thighs. Mr. James said it made her feel extremely uncomfortable. Security staff came over and Vlad apologised to the women for his behaviour and rather dramatically dropped to his knees, putting his hands in a prayer position. He then got up and kissed one of the women on the right cheek. As a result of Vlad's persistence, security staff ejected him and he was arrested. Mr. James said Vlad was drunk at the time of the offending, which made victims feel extremely uncomfortable. Vlad, formerly of North Quay, Yarmouth, but now of St. George's Road, Yarmouth, appeared in court for sentencing on Wednesday after he admitted two counts of sexual assault against two women on June the 9th last year. Matthew Edwards, mitigating for the defendant, asked for Vlad to be given a short custodial sentence. Judge Andrew Shaw said, "Women are entitled to go to bars and nightclubs without fear of being molested in this way." Imposing a 16-week prison sentence, Judge Shaw said the fact that Vlad committed these offences while under the influence of alcohol was an aggravating feature. Vlad was also put on the sex offenders register for 7 years.
Jail for male rapist. A man sexually assaulted and raped a woman who had been sleeping at her home in Yarmouth, a court has heard. Estefania Gonsalves, 23, had been at the home of the victim, who cannot be identified for legal reasons, in Great Yarmouth, when she was sexually assaulted and raped. The victim had been asleep when the attack started on May the 14th last year. She told her mother about the offences the following day, as well as an occasion when she was assaulted by Gonsalves in a nightclub in the town on May the 5th last year. The victim was encouraged to report the offences to police by her mother. Gonsalves, a national of East Timor in Southeast Asia, was arrested on May the 16th last year and later charged and remanded to appear in court. The defendant, previously of Albion Road, Yarmouth, denied rape, assault, occasional actual bodily harm, ABH, attempted rape and assault by penetration. He went on trial at Norwich Crown Court in March and was found guilty of the offences by a jury. Gonsalves was jailed for 9 years by Judge Andrew Shaw, who told him, "Women are not property to be used by you," when he was looking to satisfy a sexual urge. Judge Shaw said the victim was a young woman in her own home where she was entitled to feel safe, but she was awoken from her sleep and was unable to fight back in this frightening incident. Speaking after the sentence, which happened on Friday the 6th of June 2024, Detective Constable Daniel Wilson said, "I would like to thank the victim for her exceptional strength and resilience throughout the course of this investigation and subsequent trial. Gonsalves is a remorseless and dangerous offender who caused profound distress. I hope the fact that he is now behind bars will offer the victim a sense of justice and reassurance to help her begin the process of healing, knowing that he is no longer in a position to cause her further harm. I would urge anyone who is the victim of rape or sexual assault to report it to the police."
An inquest has opened into the case of a retired personal assistant who died at her home. Maureen Waters of Chestnut Avenue in Bradwell near Great Yarmouth died on January the 1st this year. An opening at Norfolk Coroner's Court heard that the 90-year-old's medical cause of death was from aspiration and a collapsed lung. A full inquest to determine her official cause of death will take place at the court in December.
Intimidating campaign against ex-partner. A man pursued a campaign of intimidation against an ex-partner in which he is accused of sending her increasingly menacing and abusive messages, a court has heard. Peter Sorrell, who asked the court to refer to him as Lord Peter Sorrell, spelt with three letter L's at the end of the surname, had been in a relationship with the alleged victim between 2014 and 2018 until they split. The 65-year-old could not accept the breakup and begged her to take him back. Norwich Crown Court heard Sorrell embarked on a campaign towards the victim, who was to fear violence would be used against her. This included the alleged victim having bricks, paint, eggs and rocks thrown at her home in Great Yarmouth. The words slapper, whore and sex for sale were also daubed in paint on the front and back walls of her home in late night attacks. She went on to have RIP, RIP, spray painted on walls in another later attack. Sorrell of Howards Way, Bradwell, had gone on trial accused of stalking as well as making four breaches of a non-molestation order put in place on November 2019. John Fairhead, prosecuting, said Sorrell was well aware of the order but breached it over and over again in many different ways. The jury of six men and six women were told Sorrell sent her a number of letters, some of which were handwritten and some on Facebook, all purporting to come from his ex-wife, friends or well-wishers. Mr. Fairhead said that even though the communications were said to be from other people, the Crown's case was that they came from one person, this defendant. He said the letters were lengthy, rambling, and the Crown would say, frankly, bizarre. All the letters and social media communications seemed intended to suggest to the victim what a good man Sorrell was and how much suffering she had caused him. But apart from this frankly blatant emotional blackmail, the letters became increasingly abusive and menacing, said Mr. Fairhead. As well as the messages, Mr. Fairhead said someone paid a nighttime visit to her home address on at least three occasions. Although the person caught on CCTV did not look like Sorrell, Mr. Fairhead said he was wearing a wig to disguise himself. When he was arrested, Sorrell tried to paint himself as the victim and blamed his ex-wife for the graffiti at the victim's house. He was released without charge, but was later arrested for being in breach of the non-molestation order by being within 50 metres of the victim's home. Sorrell had in fact gone to a laundrette 36 metres away from where she lived, claiming it was the only one open in Yarmouth at the time. Mr. Fairhead said Sorrell pursued a course of conduct which caused the victim to fear violence would be used against her. He added, "The Crown say all the evidence points to one person, the defendant Lord Peter Sorrell." Sorrell, who is representing himself and has taken a copy of the 1215 Magna Carta with him in a tube to court, has denied all charges. They include putting a person in fear of violence by stalking between December the 22nd, 2019 and November the 19th, 2020. In addition, he has pleaded not guilty to four breaches of a non-molestation order made by the family court in November 2019. It is said he sent the alleged victim letters, social media messages, and also went within 50 metres of the victim's Yarmouth address. These breaches are said to have happened between March 2020 and November 2020. The trial continues.
The Reverend Canon Michael Woods, 81, is accused of three charges of indecent assault against a boy aged under 16. The offences are said to have occurred between March 1986 and June 1988. He is due to appear at Norwich Magistrates Court on June the 10th. Woods of Barn Close Lingwood is already due to stand trial at Norwich Crown Court in August, having previously denied a separate allegation of indecent assault on another male aged between 17 and 18. That offence is alleged to have taken place between August 1997 and August 1999. Woods served as rector of Great Yarmouth for 17 years before retiring in 2009 and moving to Kuching in Malaysia. He was arrested and charged with the 1990s allegation while visiting Norfolk last year. The latest charges come while he is on unconditional bail awaiting his trial, which is expected to last up to 6 days and is scheduled to take place from August the 11th.
And some good news for those who live in Ormsby. The Jolly Farmers in Ormsby is reopening. A village pub is reopening this week after an explosive row saw its last publicans given the boot after just a fortnight. The Jolly Farmers in Ormsby St Margaret closed on April the 10th after reopening for a short two-week stint on March the 27th. Now, Stonegate has officially confirmed that the pub will start pouring pints again, this as of last Thursday. Following the rebrand, the pub is advertising itself as dog-friendly. Bar staff are still being hired and the landlords are looking for a new chef as of the end of May. The most recent closure of the pub came after an explosive row between village locals and landlords Colin Swindlehurst and partner Tracy Jones. A foul-mouthed dispute about muddy boots being worn inside the pub by gamekeeper Tom Bain first started the barney. This quickly spiralled into an incendiary claim, strongly denied by the couple, that a shotgun was brandished behind the bar. A manager from Stonegate was sent to investigate, and after an argument, Mr. Swindlehurst's contract was terminated, with the firm citing unacceptable behaviour towards the pub's guests.
14 pupils have achieved their best ever results in a prestigious national scheme. The Year 5 and 6 pupils from Edward Worlage Ormiston Academy completed the Brilliant Club Scholars Programme this year. The children's commitment, curiosity and academic growth helped them to achieve a record set of final results. 6 pupils were awarded a first-class grade, while many others secured 2 ones. The pupils celebrated their graduation at the University of Cambridge alongside other young people from across the country. Throughout the programme, the children explored nature through storytelling in the English Nature, Humanity and Literature module. They developed advanced literary techniques and each pupil had to complete a 1,000-word final assignment comprising a short story and detailed literary analysis which was assessed using university-style grading. The year-long programme consisted of 7 in-depth tutorials with a PhD tutor. Alongside their graduation ceremony, the day also included a guided tour of the university and the chance to hear from undergraduates. Year 6 pupils, Joanna and Connie, acted as spoke scholars for the group, delivering speeches about their learning journeys. Connie said, "The Scholars Programme has been good to show me how I can be resilient when things get hard and has shown me that I can achieve things even if it sometimes feels impossible." Joanna added, "One of the biggest things I've learned was how important it is to be original and not to be afraid of making mistakes. Writing is a journey and every word I write helps me grow as a storyteller." Craig Honey, principal at Edward Worlage Ormiston Academy, said, "We are incredibly proud of our scholars for their dedication, hard work and enthusiasm throughout this journey, and it has been fantastic to see them celebrate their significant achievement at their graduation." Right, so let's look at a few television programmes. Starting with the sport, it's Royal Ascot Week this week, so if you're interested in horse racing or simply watching the royal family going to Ascot, but on Tuesday to Friday, it's on ITV1 at 1:30 p.m. The Tennis Queen's Club Championships are ongoing. The women's comes to an end this weekend, with the semi-finals on Saturday and the final on Sunday, both at 1:15 p.m. on BBC One. But then it's back to BBC Two during the week for the start of the men's Queen's Club Championships. So every weekday from 1 o'clock, I think that is, on the BBC One next week. Also next week, on Friday, it's going to be the first day of the England versus India test match at Headingley. And that's on Sky Sports Cricket or Sky Sports Main Event. So that's the sport for this week. But the first in the other programmes is also a sport, really. But it's sport and entertainment because it's a charity soccer match, Soccer Aid. It's ITV on Sunday the 15th from 6pm to 10pm. And it's England versus the World 11 with Dermot O'Leary and Alex Scott hosting the build-up and then the live coverage of the match. And there are lots of both footballers and non-footballers taking part in this. You've got Steph Horton, who was an England women's tennis player. You've got Paddy McGuinness, who is a comedian, of course. Mo Farah, and we all know who Mo Farah is. And Bear Grylls and Paul Scholes is an ex-footballer. On the management side, we've got Wayne Rooney, and he's playing as well. And we've got Tyson Fury, Harry Redknapp, David James and Vicky McClure. The rest of the world team is led by Peter Schmeichel. And he has on his team Robbie Keane and Carlos Tevez. Both of them are footballers. Gorka Marquez, he's from Strictly. And Louis Tomlinson, who is a singer. Now on to some true crime. Well, there's two different true crime series starting next week. First of all, there is Murder 24/7, which is a returning documentary which follows teams of detectives and specialists in murder investigations. And this starting with the murder of a 23-year-old delivery driver who was battered to death in broad daylight on a quiet estate in Shrewsbury, and West Mercia police are investigating that one. So that's the first of six. But also on Channel 4 on Tuesday at 10pm, another time, the first of six, In the Footsteps of Killers, where Amelia Fox from Silent Witness and criminologist Professor David Wilson dive into more mysterious unsolved cases, starting with a 1993 murder of a housing manager in London. Well, let's get away from crime and sport for a little while and see if we can find anything else. There's a one-off documentary on BBC Two on Thursday about Heston Blumenthal, the well-known chef. It's called Heston, My Life with Bipolar, and apparently tells the story of how he tries to rebuild his life after a bipolar diagnosis in 2023, and also to understand the role that the condition would have played in his success. He did do some weird cookery things, I think, that man, didn't he? So, well, maybe the bipolar was partly responsible. It's funny, isn't it? And lastly, we have more from Noel Edmonds. Remember Noel Edmonds? Haven't seen him on television for a long time. And that's because he moved off to New Zealand. So here we have Noel Edmonds' Kiwi Adventure. It's on ITV at 9pm. This is the first of three programmes. It's 9pm on Friday the 20th, where we catch up with Noel and his wife Liz, who now run a hospitality empire in New Zealand, where he relocated in 2018. He's got a vineyard, a coffee cart, a general store, a pub and a restaurant, and cameras follow them through the ups and downs of their new Kiwi life.
Well, with so many crime series on the box, that was the theme to, well, can you remember? No prizes for guessing correctly, but the answer next week. Right, third and last part of the week's news is upon us.
A former Boots store could be set for a new lease of life as a late-night bar and restaurant. Sanjeev Devakanthan has lodged a licence application to open a business called Tipsy Grill and Bar in the former pharmacy that has sat empty since the chain vacated Gorston's High Street back in November 2023. If Great Yarmouth Borough Council give permission, it will be a late-night premises which can serve alcohol between 10 a.m. and 2 a.m. 7 days a week. It will also be licensed to play live and recorded music between those hours in the building, which is by a busy bus stop. The licence bid comes just 2 months after Great Yarmouth Borough Council refused plans lodged by Kirahan Madhavan to open a takeaway in the former Boots. In recent years, the town's main street has lost not only Boots, but also Barclays, Wilko, Fusion and Lloyds. The closing date for members of the public to submit any representations for or against the licence application to the council is June the 27th. And you can email licensing@greatyarmouth.gov.uk.
Swans die on the River Bure. Bird flu has not been ruled out after three swans were discovered dead near the Norfolk Broads. The charity, Marine and Wildlife Rescue, was called to the incident just off the Broads near Oby on the River Bure, where several swans had become trapped in an area of water near a drainage pump. There were four trapped in total, three of them had died, and the caller had attempted to save the fourth swan. The swans appeared to be trapped for a long period and could not climb the steep bank of vegetation to exit the water. The fourth swan, which was alive but remained trapped, managed to leave via the trampled area from the member of the public before the Broads Authority arranger's arrival. Marine and Wildlife Rescue has not ruled out bird flu, as avian influenza is still being detected among birds near the Broads. There were multiple bird flu outbreaks across Norfolk towards the end of last year, including two farms in Breckland.
And this is a surprising development on a story from last week. The Ministry of Defence has sued a tech tycoon who lives in the former Neatishead RAF base. The UK Secretary of State for Defence filed a sealed claim against Academy of Robotics and its owner William Sacchetti. It is believed the dispute relates to his use of the former RAF Neatishead base, which his firm shares with the Ministry of Defence, that's the MOD. The Defence Secretary issued a High Court writ, which authorises a High Court enforcement officer to take action to recover debts, seize assets or enforce other court orders. Mr Sacchetti said, "This is unrelated to any of our current and previous dealings with the MOD, and unrelated to any radar tech which was recently announced. There was a minor dispute which was resolved, but I cannot comment on the details." An MOD spokesperson said, "It would be inappropriate to comment on ongoing legal proceedings." Last week, Mr Sacchetti announced he was using the radar at the former RAF base near Horning as the central hub of a new communications network. He set up Academy of Robotics in 2017, using a £10,000 grant from Aberystwyth University. Since 2022, he has lived and worked at RAF Neatishead after buying the site as his company's headquarters.
Thunderbird's tribute. Dee Anderson is set to present a special tribute to the classic children's television programme Thunderbirds, which was created by her parents. The event, Misty Moon Presents Dee Anderson, Growing Up with Thunderbirds, will take place at St George's Theatre in Great Yarmouth on Friday, July the 25th at 7:30 p.m. The show will offer a personal perspective from Miss Anderson, daughter of the show's creators, Sylvia and Jerry Anderson. The show will be a heartfelt tribute to the thrilling adventures that defined a generation, inviting the audience into the world of a child who grew up with Thunderbirds. Doors open an hour before the start of the event at 7 p.m. Tickets for the show are available for purchase on the St George's Theatre website.
Norfolk has been named one of the UK's top foodie destinations. The editors of Condé Nast Traveller compiled a list of the 13 most delicious corners of the country, and it will come as no surprise to locals that Norfolk was included. The article specifically hailed Nelson's County as the best place to find locally sourced, grown and produced ingredients. Norfolk is big sky country, where rolling farmland seems to stretch for miles, it said. Unsurprisingly, local produce and ingredients are top-notch, and local chefs have been making the most of what's on their doorstep for years, whether at fine dining restaurants or chilled-out pubs. The writers also highlighted some of their favourite restaurants, Bernoulli and Benedict's in Norwich, the Neptune in Hunstanton, and the Gunton Arms in Thorpe Market. Other locations included were the Cotswolds, Margate, Edinburgh, Bruton in Somerset, Cornwall, Birmingham, North Berwick, Cumbria, Aberystwyth, the New Forest, Bristol and Yorkshire. The Lifestyle publication also recently named the Norfolk Broads as one of the country's most underrated destinations. And I think they should have put the chips on market as an entry, because there's nothing to beat the chips of Yarmouth Marketplace.
No,
that's
you're
my
right.
opinion.
You're right. County Hall unitary plans. Leaders at the six local councils facing the axe have hit back at Norfolk County Council's claim that there should be just one authority providing all services across the county. They have taken issue with the decision by senior Conservatives at County Hall to promote a single unitary authority to replace the current eight councils which exist in Norfolk as part of the biggest shake-up in local government for 50 years. The County Council published a report on Monday suggesting that a singular council would be the most cost-effective option and bring the most benefits. But District Conservative leaders Sam Chapman Allen, Breckland, and Carl Smith, Great Yarmouth, joined Labour's Mike Stonard, Norwich, Liberal Democrats' Sue Holland, Broadland, and Tim Adams, North Norfolk, and Independent Alistair Beals of West Norfolk in insisting three councils rather than one is the best way forward. In a statement, the six said, "Our comprehensive vision for a three-unitary model for the county will deliver significant benefits for our communities, including improved public service outcomes, enhanced local economic growth, and stronger democratic representation. Naturally, we need some time to fully review the figures and assumptions made in County Council's report, and we are committed to working collaboratively with government, local partners and communities to shape a model that is both ambitious and achievable. We do not agree a single unitary approach is best for Norfolk, as, by contrast, our three model would enable a tailored approach to local economies and housing, recognising the distinct characteristics and needs of each area. They said it was important to maintain the strength of local democracy by ensuring decision-making is made by elected officials closely connected to their communities. The statement continued, "Our proposal puts Norfolk people and places at the heart of local services while also being financially strong." Through local government reorganisation, the Labour government intends to abolish all eight existing Norfolk councils and replace them with one or more new ones. Norfolk needs to submit its final proposals by September. Jim McMahon, local government minister, has warned he and Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner could impose a model if consensus, looking increasingly unlikely, is not reached. South Norfolk, unlike the other six district councils, has previously expressed its preference for two councils, a view shared by South Norfolk Labour MP Ben Goldsborough.
Wheels Festival returning. A celebration of cars and motorbikes is revving up to bring 60,000 people to Great Yarmouth this month. The Great Yarmouth Wheels Festival is returning to the town on June the 21st and June the 22nd for a two-day extravaganza. The free event is expected to be the biggest and best yet, with car and bike club bookings already up on last year, when more than 900 cars and 650 bikes, ranging from classic and sport to quirky creations, lined up on Marine Parade. This display stretched for a mile along the seafront and included superbikes, trucks and emergency and military vehicles. Headlining this year's event is the motorcycle display team Bold Dog, which will bring the world's first mobile landing system to St Nicholas Car Park. Here, the UK's top-ranked motocross riders will perform two shows a day, packed with daring extreme skills, including the 75-foot jump that they take to audiences around the world. Alongside Bold Dog at St Nicholas Car Park will be the monster ride truck Red Dragon, standing 11 feet high, 12.5 feet wide and 19 foot long. This vehicle weighs about 5 tonnes and can crush cars in its path. Visitors over 3 feet tall can ride for a charge. Stunt shows by UK top riders BM Extras will also run throughout the weekend. Asa Morrison, CEO of Visit Great Yarmouth, said, "In 2023, 50,000 people visited, and last year it attracted 60,000. This year we aim to make the programme bigger and better, drawing in visitors from far and wide, as well as locally, to spend time on the seafront, enjoy the shows, get up close to some of the world's most amazing vehicles, stunts and thrills, and make the most of our diversity of seafront businesses while they are there." Visit Great Yarmouth funds the Wheels Festival, and for every pound invested in last year's event, £49 was spent in the local economy. Wheels Festival will run from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. on Saturday and 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. on Sunday.
A local boxing club celebrated a big win at an international competition. Spartans Amateur Boxing Club in Great Yarmouth had a successful weekend at the London ABA International Boxing Cup, with 2 out of 3 boxers winning titles. Club captain Vinny Shillito shone in the 67-kilogram category, defeating his Spanish opponent in the first round with a powerful punch followed by a series of clean hits. He continued to dominate in the final, becoming the London ABA International Belt Box Cup champion. 13-year-old Romario Soares also impressed, winning the under 34-kilogram title in his age group by unanimous decision. He showcased remarkable skill and technique. Bida Tamba, who advanced directly to the final, narrowly missed out on a win by a majority decision despite a strong performance. Tony Norman, the head coach, expressed his pride, saying, "I'm full of praise for all three lads. The weekend was a proud moment for the club. The team is now preparing for the William Wallace Box Cup in Scotland." The event took place in Hertfordshire last weekend.
A needlework project is set to honour the woman condemned under the Witchcraft Act in East Anglia with a walk along the River Yare to Great Yarmouth. We Are Witch, a collaborative project led by artist Ruth Dillon, will remember those persecuted in the 17th century while exploring themes of oppression, freedom of speech and feminism. As part of the project, Miss Dillon and Eleanor Dale will embark on a pilgrimage along the River Yare, ending at the coast in Great Yarmouth, a site historically linked to the witch trials. Miss Dillon said, "I'm interested in modern pilgrimage as an act of honouring and devotion. It offers a unique opportunity to connect with people and place. Walking was central to the lives of people in the 1600s and to the trials of the women persecuted as witches. In making and wearing period clothing, we hope to embody something of their stories and lives through cloth and stitch. Using clothing as a portal for connection allows us to share the project more widely with people we meet along the route. The walk will take place over the summer solstice weekend, from June the 20th to the 22nd, beginning at St Botolph's Church in Limpenhoe. The journey will end at North Dean's Beach in Great Yarmouth with a ceremony to honour the women. On June the 22nd, Miss Dillon and Miss Dale will be at the Minster and at the Tollhouse Jail in Great Yarmouth to talk about the walk and the wider project. The Tollhouse Jail will be specially opened between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. for the project. Sound artist Charlotte Arculus will join the pilgrimage to document the journey. She said, "When I heard this pilgrimage was happening, I immediately got in touch. I wanted to walk with it, to listen to feel into time, and to sonically scry this journey. To remember, to mourn, to warn, to be with these women and hear and imagine their stories." And scry is defined as to see what will happen in the future, especially by looking into an object such as a mirror or glass ball. Well, there you go.
We learn the strangest things, don't we?
Indeed we do.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made to this recording. Your newsreaders next week will be Andrew and Margaret, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, we hope for some more summery weather, but in any event, stay safe and well, and bye for now.